Hello and welcome to the ICTRA Space Podcast. My name is Nora Engelbert. Together with Margret Jäger, I'm welcoming you to today's episode for a series on applied anthropology. Margret and I are eager to show experienced team leads, C-levels, and HR representatives the value anthropology brings to the table to help you thrive your business success. Anthropology is about a holistic view on everything that makes us human and on how we as humans perceive and interact with the world. So, anthropology is key for business fields like customer experience, doctor-patient interactions, communication, team building, the intersection of humans and technology like AI, robotics, or any customer interfaces, and for the analysis and differentiation of culture, structure, and technology in organizations and communities. Lean back, listen in, and let yourself be inspired by the stories and insights from our guests here in the ICTRA space, under the Tree of Life.
Hello and welcome to ICTRA Space Podcast. My name is Margret and I'm one of the hosts. And today, Nora, our co-host, is here as well.
Hi.
And our guest, Bo.
Hi.
We are very much looking forward to this conversation. And I would like to introduce Bo to you. Bo Wang is an anthropologist based in Wisconsin in the US. And I had the pleasure to meet Bo in July 2024 at the annual IASA conference in Barcelona, where it happens that we ended up in the same conference panel, listening to each other's experience about being an applied anthropologist. And Bo is going to tell us more today about his super interesting work in health tech industry. So Bo, please introduce yourself to us and our audience.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, everyone. Thank you, Margret. So my name is Bo, and I'm now working in the healthcare tech industry as lead user experience researcher and anthropologist. So in this space, I mainly do research and discovering people's needs in managing chronic conditions and then trying to use anthropology's insights and use ethnography to uncover patients' needs using virtual healthcare platform apps to track their health data and food, exercise, nutrition. So a lot of stuff. So I think I'm really excited to utilize what I learned in anthropology and help to design inclusive solutions in healthcare, because I truly believe healthcare should be for everyone.
That sounds very interesting to me, to be honest, because I was very much looking forward to this episode. As me working in IT and business transformation projects as change manager, transformation manager, doing Microsoft, doing SAP, whatever, systems integration and system implementation, always the aspect of the user experience is in center. So I was always looking forward to be more in health tech, because the topic of health, medical anthropology, and healthy relationships is something I'm very much interested in. So especially here, I'm so curious, Bo, to hear how you combine anthropology with the important task for user experience in innovation and production.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nora. I think you're right. You know, anthropology in business, in tech, in your experience, you know, user experience holds a central place. And anthropology has entered this with the context, you know, coming from studying people. So I think that's what we are trained for, understanding people, talking to people, observing them. I think this is how we enter the scene, the stage, and also in applied anthropology setting. So as you mentioned, because in text-based and then coming to a solution is very important. So that's why we have to design our ethnography methods suitable for a quick delivery and also uncover the depth of human insights and contributing to the conversation.
I would like to step in here because you're mentioning ethnographic methods. And for our listeners who are not much into qualitative research methods or even anthropologists, ethnography is a set of methodology. It's a methodology which is applied. And in classical ethnography would take at least 6 months of time. So how do you deal with that in this probably much faster health tech industry to gain the insights, create your results, and help developing products?
Yeah, that's a good question, Margaret. I think, ethnography traditionally it requires a longer time and a more immersive experience. However, nowadays, we have like pockets of human experience. It's not, kind of studied, we know little about. We can also deploy much shorter and faster version of ethnography method to approach this population or this community and then trying to gain insights. So it's not really about quantifying the time. Rather, it's just how you open yourself, to new ideas and then come into the scene without much presumptions and then take people's stories, words. You can start with face value and then trying to connect the dots and trying to understand, bring in new, fresh concepts. So I think this is what really ethnography is about. And, especially when, each of our daily life is kind of so structured by schedules and obligations. And then, we have such diverse population, like Margaret, Lenora work with immigrations, and I work with lower income in healthcare space. So I think it's very meaningful to kind of adopt this open-ended and very ethnographic approach to uncover these sort of insights.
Thank you. That's very reassuring, I think, for everybody out there who wants to apply qualitative research methods and sometimes might have the feeling, oh no, but that's not real anthropology. No, of course, it is our anthropological skills, methods and knowledge that is applied. And you have these methods once developed in academia, but then being adapted. And you said a user experience research. And I know from our meeting that you have been an academic researcher before, and now you are in health tech industry. And you used to live in Europe for some time, and now you live in the US. Having more user experience researchers in the US or in other international companies than in European countries? Or how do we experience these differences as you have lived on both continents already?
Yes, that's an excellent question. I think, my own experience kind of suggested it can take multiple routes to, get this kind of career path. And then I also recognize currently, like with the emergence of generative AI across United States, Europe, and the broader world, and then there could be new things, coming, new kind of skills. The way I see it is the training we get from anthropology is very valuable in the tech space because it is a space, the more and more aspects of human life are being standardized and being fed into the technology, and then we get something back. But this process, we cannot do it successfully without understanding the human, right? So I think sometimes we don't want to be taken away our autonomy by tech, but other times we wish tech to do more for us. So I think that's very interesting, always kind of trying to understand in this space. For example, I do research on like AI assisted chat bot experience. People would say like, of course I don't want chatbot to make diagnosis for me on prescriptions.
No, I want a person. I want a human being.
Yes. But other time, you know, they just want, you know, just give based on everything you know about me. Can you give me a meal plan? Can you design my, you know, weekly exercise? So I think people are just concerned about their privacy, safety, but at the same time, they also want to enjoy the benefits of convenience and, you know, kind of, I don't have to do the boring, repetitive work. So I think that's also part of the story. So I think all these just shows, you know, there's a lot of room for anthropology to jump in and to uncover such needs.
I really like what you just said, because you have now broadened again the horizon of our topic, mentioning and outlining how giving technology to people and observing what they do with it and what they want from it, again, is a perfect field for ethnography and analyzing how people act and what meaning they give to what they deal with. So in this case, the AI, for example. And you said before that also your job as user experience researcher is, of course, also to ensure that the technology is designed in a way the diversity of the population requires it to be. To me, it now seems like you're doing the research with the variety of people and finding out, okay, we cannot standardize everything because people are different. And then again, you have designed it for the person and you observe that the person himself or herself is ambivalent and sometimes wants more and sometimes wants less. So very exciting to me.
Yeah, that's a good point, Nora. I think with diverse population, I think a lot of times because tech has this standardization drive, so, you know, working on diverse population pose a challenge for them. What I found through work is actually it works better because I'll give you a story. You know, when I first started to understand why do people choose virtual healthcare, you know, when they can just go to a doctor and see a doctor face in face. But then I realized it's not for everyone. And then especially for lower income, for physical mobility, disability people. So it's really a task that may prevent them to access healthcare. But then later on with the pandemic, you know, I realized we should expand this category to include also remote workers, people who travel for work, and then for them to access some health providers would be, you know, much more desirable with virtual healthcare. So I think, as you can see from research, you know, anthropology can show us, you know, we should expand the category. We may create new category. And then the purpose is to have more inclusive design, because the things you think you're designing for lower income or disability population, you ended up benefiting everyone working remotely, working frequent travels.
And I would like to add also people with special care needs and very in remote areas, there is no care for them. I've recently learned that here in Austria is a project for HIV care. And in the countryside, they don't have specialized doctors and they also have discrimination experience in physicians' consultations. And now there is a virtual healthcare project where physicians who like to specialize I offer virtual consultation and they're having a very good uptake rate and very good evaluations by the patients. So I think virtual healthcare has for so many people a great chance to get access to care when they would not have had access if there is energy, if there is the technical device, of course, if there is internet connection. Phone calls, of course, would be another thing which are also possible, of course, and phones might be easier accessible or phone lines than internet connection, but
we are talking about US here, not Austria and Germany.
It's the same. I think, Margaret, you're absolutely right, because I started kind of working in this space actually during the pandemic, the COVID. I think there's a need to distribute vaccination to everyone. So like exactly like Margaret said, some places, remote places, they only have phone book. So you have to call everyone. Like like little villages or counties, they don't have the infrastructure. So I think, you know, to being able to connect everyone to something and then for health needs, sometimes it's, you know, necessary and a must have with, you know, the kind of pandemic or just environmental climate change. Like, I think there will be more instances like so. So we are like, we need to be connected more in this diverse ways. Like you said, it does not need to be an app, can be phones, can be, you know, lower tech. So I think this comes to another point. I think the notion of tech literacy or high tech literacy or low tech literacy is not a good concept. If we apply anthropological critique on that, you know, we could better just focus on the people rather than the technology, because, you know, for example, someone with older age approaching diabetes, for example, so they may not feel like I need to learn a complex new phone app and to be able to manage like a disease that has been studied for 100 years. So I think in that sense, it's not we are blaming people to having low literacy. Rather, we have to bring people along as we find solutions.
Very good example. And while I was just listening, I realized the path we are taking here while following our story and what comes up to our mind actually shows what you said in the beginning, Bo, that with anthropology, you create new categories, you broaden the horizon and narrowing it down, and then again, new insights occur. So what you have in design thinking as a process, to me, it's very much embedded in what ethnography and anthropology had in their methods anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in design thinking, if an audience are familiar with, I think the most popular is the double diamond. So you're trying to define a problem and then you expand your horizon and then you zero in on specific, you know, solution or idea, and then you have some work on it and then have new ideas or new solutions, and then you expand it again to test again. So it's kind of like two feedback loops, and then you're constantly working on that. I like, Nora, how you describe ethnography just work the same way. I think that's why probably how anthropology and tech is meant to be working together collaboratively. I also have kind of wanted to chat with Margaret about the earlier question on ethnography. Takes a long time. It's usually done by one single researcher. Margaret, do you have any insights on how this has changed if you work in an applied setting?
I would say one of the most important aspects is that you can do rapid ethnographies, rapid data collection, but then you have to work in teams. And there is quite a lot of literature and experience out there already, because the WHO developed, based on some urgent health needs in the 60s, the rapid assessment procedures. And this was further developed. And there is today tools out there. And one thing is working in a team. And this is actually the opposite that many scientists learn at the beginning, because you have to write the bachelor thesis, you have to write the master thesis based on your single competence. And only when it comes probably to a PhD, then you get to work in a team if there is a project. Of course, in STEM research, that's different, because people may have labs or people have may have really expensive technologies where they work on bigger teams. But in social sciences, you learn to be the lonely fighter and the anthropologist that probably goes abroad and spends a year or two somewhere at the end of the world. They think this is real anthropology, while anthropology can be done everywhere and working in a team is crucial. So do you have a team? Do you have other anthropologists where you work, or other social scientists for?
Yes, yes, exactly. I think you describe it perfectly to lay out the different paths for most, you know, natural science versus social science training. And I think it's similar in the US and I think for us, for me at least, there's a lot of people in social science, we are curious, we are wandering around. I think we start with looking at some scientist publication, you know, why do they always have like 20 people to publish one thing? Whereas like in my discipline, there's usually just one person. But I say, you know, as I work with this many people, I work often with data scientists, machine learning, with business analysts, with so many different, you know, technologists, discipline, even doctors as well. So I think what I discovered, you know, what I got trained in, for example, consent form and research design, you know, budgeting, scheduling, like all research analysis, insights sharing, all this are down like concerns of everyone. So now like I cannot just keep it as a secret, or just I don't really take kind of dictate how this goes. But of course, I think for anthropologists, we are still empowered to contribute. You know, we can say like, you know, let's look at the recruitment, look at consent form, making sure it's in place, making sure the way we gather data is ethical. And it just, let's not ask people's privacy if we don't use that to impact our decision. So I think the respect for people's privacy and for ethical considerations, I think these are really still very powerful. You know, we make this space better in this way. I think that's why, like, I think a collaboration in a way for maybe audience, if you're thinking first, like, you know, but I'm introvert, I don't want to talk to people. I'm not doing that. But I think I say it's a skill. It can be learned. It's not a characteristics in psychology. I'm an introvert, but I'm very capable of working with others on consent forms, on ethics, because this is, you know, how I explain to people, and they jump on board. I think that's how basically everyone does kind of a research and build rapport with more people.
Thank you. You're really reassuring what I'm doing myself a lot, talking about ethics to people. A question popped up in my mind, Bo. Since you're in this field for some time already, have you experienced that some tech people had developed some product and it didn't work because of their own biases, and then they called an anthropologist or a social scientist and got some insights and learned, okay, we had good intentions, but it didn't work out because we didn't consider people's diversity?
Yes, exactly. That's really a great question, Margaret. I think sometimes, you know, we are the ones that bring the bad news, but I think for good intentions. So in this example, we are trying to develop, kind of relying on AI voice recognition. So the product was trying to help people log their food, or like, you know, record what you eat or throughout the day into this phone app, so you can better track your calories and nutritions to manage your health. But then we use this voice recognition, it will require people to speak about their food. For example, I will have to say I had oats with milk for a cup, and then I have two black coffees for this morning, and then I had an apple. But the way it's set up, it feels like the technologist, they are very excited. You know, they said, I don't have to type anymore. But then we found not many people are using it. So they asked me, anthropologists, to jump in. So I did research, I talked to people, diverse people, people who travel, commute to work, people who are parent, you know, take care of others. Then just immediately, as people are sharing their experience, and they say like, you know, if I on the commute, it's too noisy, I cannot just talk about my food. Or someone work in the office and their manager, colleagues are in the same room, and, you know, they cannot just talk about what they eat. It feels very out of place. So I think I recognize, you know, the more and the more I think, you know, maybe voice recognition saves time, but does not save people from the context, right? Sometimes quietly, I can use text to write things and get my job done. So I think in this case, anthropology helps us to understand a tech innovation in a more contextual way. So how people are using it is how the tech would shape our life. It's kind of like, look at the road, you know, it's not just how you just build it, hoping people would walk it. Sometimes it's because people walk this way, it works for people, then it becomes road. So I think in a way that it's, when I just review the story to the technologist, and they were like so relieved, they were like, oh, this makes sense. But I did not think about it at all.
I think that's a wonderful conclusion.
Absolutely. I wanted to say such a wonderful example to finish this episode with you, because this brought the things to the point that you have an idea, you design something, but if you don't include the people for whom it should be in the design process, then you might probably be surprised afterwards. And how insightful and how enlightening. Well, thank you very much for being our guest today. And thank you to the audience listening to that. Please feel free to contact us. And thank you very much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast is produced in collaboration with the Applied Anthropology Network of the European Association of Social Anthropologists. Thank you for listening in and being with us today. If you wish to learn more about us or our guests, please check on the ICTRA Space website, www.ictra-space.org/en, or contact us directly via info@ictra-space.org. We are happy to answer your questions and to hear your thoughts on the value anthropology has or could have for your daily work. Looking forward to sitting with you again next episode in the ICTRA space under the Tree of Life.